Something a bit different, but something quite welcome on the piano bench this time around. We have as our guest in the KPBX control room is Melody Poehler. Good morning, Melody.
Good morning, Jim.
And you recognize her voice because she's been with us on numerous occasions in the past, usually preparing for a recital or playing for us in the studio and talking about the music. We're going to change up today. And Melody has put together an idea for a program, and perhaps you can, and we'll be using some musical illustrations and just having a grand time with this. So explain your concept for the program today.
Well, it's the theme of water in piano music, and there's quite a lot of material to draw from. No pun intended there. Today we're going to feature the music of Liszt, Ravel, and Debussy, Liszt being the inspiration for a lot of the works of Ravel. And we're exploring the way that the piano can recreate the sound of water in various ways. Rain is an obvious kind of sound, but also exploring the flow of water, the range, the heights and depths, and the different sound qualities that the piano can create to get that sound of water.
And we're starting with a piece by Franz Liszt. The translates as the Play of Waters at the Villa d'Este. The fountain there inspired Liszt, and we can talk a little bit about the inspiration of the music and a bit later on. So I'm going to get in and play it now. What should be listen for as far as the sound of water? Are there any particular things that you want to point out to us before we get there?
Oh, well, pianists love to use, composers of piano music love to use rapid arpeggiation, a lot of quick scale and arpeggiation kind of sounds, and throughout there'll be some kind of a melody buried in there somewhere amidst all of that water flow.
All right. Well, you can get your waders on now because we're going to get right into the fountain. Music of Franz Liszt, played by Hélène Grimaud.
Thank you.
And that was music of Franz Liszt, Jeu d'eau à la Villa de l'Este, the play of waters at the Villa d'Este, one of the great fountains in and around Rome. Not one of those covered by Respighi in his Fountains of Rome, but a good one if you have a chance to. We were watching a video of it and being mightily impressed and wishing that for the moment that this were television, at least for that fleeting moment that we had a video to go along with it. But an amazing piece by Franz Liszt that has all those rippling arpeggios. And arpeggio, what is that? Okay, well, if you take a chord, instead of playing all the notes together, if you spread them out and play them in more of a horizontal way, or maybe, yeah, not as just one vertical block, but to kind of spreading it out, that's what you are hearing. And that's one of the things that gives the suggestion of water. An interesting thing that tells us something else about this piece also is the inscription by Liszt at the top. And it's from the Gospel of John. And Melody?
The water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life.
And if you see an image of the fountain, then all of a sudden that starts to make imminent sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and of course this comes from Franz Liszt's repentance period in his life.
He became quite the saint later in life.
This dates from 1877, and Liszt was to continue on until 1886. So that gets us started as in terms of music that uses water as its inspiration and also attempts to recreate that sense of motion, that sense of the moving of the water streaming, water spraying.
Yeah, the rhythm of water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the sound.
We move ahead here. Now, the next piece comes to us from Maurice Ravel.
Right, and he actually was inspired by the work that we just heard, and he named Jeu d'eau actually after this particular work by Liszt. And the theme of this one is also water, but it has a more secular theme to it. Shall I read the inscription, or shall we?
Yeah, and the poem is called Fête.
Yes.
Do. So now we get the celebratory aspect of water. Go ahead.
The dolphin, the sea snail, and the fat frog, spangled with spume and with naked Leto's gold, sea goddess riding the turtle's back, laughing river god tickled by the water. The bowl overflowing, the soaking spray, surface shrinking, swelling, subsiding. Wet particles render the statue iridescent, turn its moss into pearls, and brighten the rust. The entire sparkling, watery celebration of churning, chuckling, scattering, and frothing is stilled by evening in the enchanted park. And in silence near the basin, returned to glassy stillness, now burst forth fountains of yew and jets of cypress.
piece, but the best translation for the title might be Water Party. And we don't get to do that one. And music of Maurice Ravel, what's the difference? Well, you heard Italian water in the Franz Liszt piece, and now we have gone ahead and heard some French water. What's the difference? It sounds like a silly question, but maybe not, because it kind of gets to the heart of the soul of some of this music.
I think one of the principal companions of water in French water is the aspect of light. And when you talk about light, then you start to talk about color and all of the rich harmonic colors and just the insinuation of particular ideas as opposed to just saying something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the idea I came up with while we were listening to that is that whereas music that is kind of under the Germanic big umbrella, whether it's talking about Italian water or what, but, you know, music of Liszt and all that does tend to represent things, to be a little bit on the literal side, whereas the French, they more insinuate.
Right.
And, you know, the color plays such an important part in it, and that's one of the keys, I think, to understanding and to performing French music, is that color is the thing.
It
really is. We're going to move ahead from the Water Party now to some music of Claude Debussy. And this one takes us in a different direction, because the best translation of this is probably Gardens in the Rain.
Yes.
And with Debussy, of course, we introduce a different sense of music, a different musical personality. So take us through this piece.
So the image that comes to mind is perhaps children out playing and it starts to rain and they have to go inside and a big storm ensues. And then at the end, metaphorically speaking, the sun comes back out again. Buried within Gardens in the Rain are a couple of French folk tunes, and one I think is rather clever. We will no longer be going into the woods to express the frustration, perhaps, of having to come in out of the rain.
Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of tunes that are involved in this one, yes?
Yes, and the other one is a tune it's a kind of lullaby that perhaps a mother would sing to their child. And perhaps that could be the idea of how sleepy rain makes us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It puts us into a trance. And
well, you know, one of the things is that Debussy, of course, his affection for his daughter led him in directions to write this child-friendly music, and sometimes music about children, not necessarily for children. And this is a really kind of a charming thing, to use a couple of tunes like
yes.
that. Care to share either of them?
Sure. I'll give it a shot.
So this is, first of all, the one, well, you tell us.
So the first one that you might hear is Dodo l'enfant do, which goes a little like this. Dodo l'enfant do mire bien vite. Dodo l'enfant do mire bientôt. And then the second tune is the We Will No Longer Be Going Into the Woods. Nous n'irons plus au bois, les noirs sont coupés.
All right, there you have it. So, something to listen for as we go now into this piece, Gardens in the Rain, music of Claude Debussy, written in 1903. And our pianist on this
Walter Gieseking.
Walter Gieseking. Here we go. Thank you. And the pianist was Walter Giesecking, and the piece was Jardin sous la pluie, Gardens in the Rain. Charming, charming piece with a real stormy section in the middle and a real sense of narrative.
Right. You can picture what's going on within the music.
Yeah. And as you have suggested in your notes that you send me, this might be Debussy reflecting on his own childhood and a traumatic water event there. Or maybe it is a recalling of an event actually in his garden when
right.
his portrait is being painted.
And the person who painted the portrait is the one to whom the whole estampe is dedicated, Jacques-Emile Blanche.
And again, this is a different aspect. It's a different set of colors. It's also a different aspect of the water. This is not the raindrop prelude with the steady drip, drop, 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 drop. No, this has the water very much in action.
Right, and Debussy has a really good way of portraying nature in his music that is a little bit more wild and a little less nostalgic, though we're talking about him possibly remembering an event, but it's a little bit more visceral in its impact on you as a listener, I think.
Right, it's not, whatever kind of reminiscence it is, it's not a reminiscence that's kind of done in soft focus.
Right.
That the outlines are very clear. The colors are interesting. The colors range all over the place, from some fairly striking hues to pastels to all that. Again, this wonderful sense of color that the French composers are able to use, and also the colors they're able to bring out from the piano.
That's true. Yes.
All right. Well, let's proceed then. We next have another aspect of water here, and this is also a piece by Claude Debussy.
Reflet dans l'eau. And this is a very different approach to water. It's more of an interior sort of feel, I think. It's almost dreamlike in its interpreted, in its composition.
Mm-hmm. And in your notes you say that he explores the softer resonances of the piano to create what is or what are the image or the set of images that you hear in your mind's eye. Boy, that's a mixed image, but never mind.
We talked a little bit about light as the companion of water. And as a companion to light, there's shadow. And so this piece, this Reflections on the Water, is very nocturnal for me in its dreamlike state. I think I envision a body of water at nighttime and how that would look and how the person would feel about that as opposed to something in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, well, let's give a listen to that. This, again, is Walter Giesecking, the pianist, music of Claude Debussy, Reflections on the Water.
Thank you.
Pianist was Walter Gieseking, and that was the piece Reflections on the Water from the first book of Images by Claude Debussy, a piece written in 1905. Such a couple of things on that piece, such an extraordinary ending.
Yes.
You were mentioning that one of the images here, and I think image is the key word here, one of the images that comes to your mind in listening to that is of the pebble dropped in the still water.
So yes.
Toward the end there with the ripples going out. There's another section that really struck me in the middle of the piece where kind of the what we're talking about all came together. And that was the section where there was pretty active and aggressive arpeggiation of those chords in the middle. Underlying that, there was a melodic whole tone passage, and there was this stirring in the bass line, which was not any kind of angular thing. Rather, it was like the darkness of the bottom of the water.
Something's rising to the
something rising slowly to the surface. The music of Claude Debussy, I mean, the collection is called Images,
right.
And imagery was so important. He despised the label impressionist, and we'll grant him that. He can despise it, fine. But his work is definitely informed by that approach to visual art.
Yes, and there, just during that time period, there was such a wealth of communication between artists and among the literary set too. They were all talking amongst each other. I can't. there was so much cross, I guess, cross-pollination going on within. I don't know if the painters thought of their work as music and the musicians thought of their work as painting, but
that's entirely possible. Yes, it's entirely possible. And the poets also, it was the period of the symbolists. Mm-hmm. And again, this extraordinary imagery that that so affected the thought and the work of Claude Debussy. The poet Jules Lafourgue said something really interesting. Maybe you could read that for us.
Of course. The impressionist eye reaches a point where it can see reality in the living atmosphere of forms, decomposed, refracted by beings and things, in incessant variation.
And I think that kind of movement, the incessant variation, was certainly present in Reflections on the Water.
It certainly was.
And the unity of the arts at this point, one informing the other, is a fascinating thing. And I don't know, it's not entirely unique in history, but it was really an unusually rich period.
Very rich. Extraordinary, I think.
Yeah. Many reasons to wish that you had been alive then. Unfortunately, it was before antibiotics, so that kind of really changes the picture. But, you know, just an amazing time where so many ideas. Of course, Debussy was so influenced by his hearing of the gamelan the first time.
Yes, and incidentally, Ravel was there, too, hearing the gamelan. I wonder if they crossed paths at that point.
It's entirely possible. And this is something we were talking about, actually, before the program today, that the time of Liszt and the time of Debussy and the time of Ravel are not like separate closets in the big room that's called music history. Rather, they're very much overlapping, and overlapping in terms of time, and overlapping also in terms of one generation very much influencing the next generation.
Yes, and the Romantic composers' influence on what we call the Impressionist composers. I had no idea that Ravel was so inspired by Liszt.
Mm-hmm. And other composers, and we were talking, again, this is something we were chatting about briefly before. If you go back to the music, especially of Robert Schumann, with the use he makes of, again, breaking up the chords, the arpeggios, the arpeggiation of the music, with sometimes the melody buried inside, which is something that makes this music challenging to play because you've got to pick out that tune.
I like to think of it as tangled.
Yes. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we decide to play some Robert Schumann.
Right.
And again, this informs the generation picks this up and does with it what they will. But it's still the germ is from another time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go ahead here. We have now a piece by Maurice Ravel, and this is from Gaspard de la Nuit. It's Ondine. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Ondine, this is another nod to the Romantic era. The poet, where am I looking at my notes here? Aloysius Bertrand was actually a romantic poet who came back into vogue in the early 20th century. And he was very popular along with Edgar Allan Poe. And he was himself somewhat influenced by E.T.A. Hoffmann, which is another connection with Schumann and Schumann's influences. And it has this very dark, brooding, romantic tone to it. And Maurice Ravel's Ondine, he wrote based on these poems by Bertrand, and he wished that the text of the poetry would be connected with the performance so that the people listening could understand or know what the poem was about.
Mm-hmm. And could you share that with us, and then we'll go to the
piece.
Of course.
Listen, listen, it is I. It is Undine brushing with these drops of water the resonant diamond panes of your window, illuminated by the dull moonbeams. And here, in a dress of moiré, is the lady of the castle on her balcony, gazing at the beautiful starry night and the beautiful slumbering lake. Each wave is a water sprite swimming in the current. Each current is a path winding toward my palace, and my palace is of fluid construction, at the bottom of the lake, within the triangle formed by fire, earth, and air. Listen, listen. My father is beating the croaking water with a branch of green alder, and my sisters are caressing the cool islands of grasses, water lilies, and gladioli with their arms of foam, or are laughing at the tottering bearded willow that is angling. After murmuring her song, she besought me to accept her ring on my finger, to be the husband of an Undine, and to visit her palace with her, to be the king of the lakes. And when I replied that I was in love with a mortal woman, she was sulky and vexed. She wept a few tears, burst out laughing, and vanished in showers that formed white trickles down my blue window panes.
Thank you.
that last piano resonance just kind of hanging in the air. That was Ondine by Maurice Ravel. And Ondine is?
It's a mythological water sprite that comes from German mythology. And it's where the Rhine maidens came from. You have your mermaids, kind of otherworldly, supernatural being that lives in the water.
There we go. And very nicely characterized there by Maurice Ravel. And that recording made by Jean-Yves Thibaudet. And that has to close our examination of waterborne music, or literally water, B-O-R-N, that the idea of water, the play of water, all the various aspects of something that is so integral to us maintaining our lives, and all the great beauty and the danger. We didn't get into La Mer territory, but that's okay. Leave that for another time. It's been a great pleasure to host Melody Puller, who is a teacher at the Sandpoint Conservatory and a fine pianist who has typically been with us to play through music herself and talk a little bit about it, especially in preparation for recitals and the like. But in this case, just have a chance to kick back and to listen to some discs with other folks playing and just take it apart a little bit and see what makes it tick. So, Melody, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.